Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 103, Sparkle, Monday, December 28th, 2015. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. This week's episode includes the following segments: the back porch, the front porch, and gratitude journal. I'd like to welcome Loring, who is knitting hiker on Ravelry, as well as Violin Carey and Nancy S. Werner from San Francisco. They have left personal messages or notes on the Ravelry board. Thanks so much for listening and for saying hello. The past few episodes, I have been providing a little bit of an update and a reintroduction of myself and the podcast. In episode 101, I talked a little bit about the title of the podcast, Yin Hu, which is my home, Yin Hu Cha Yuan, Silver Lake Tea House. And last episode, I talked a little bit about my crafting story. And today I thought I'd just give a little bit of an overview of this podcast and how it came to be. I have long been a lover of podcasts. Since receiving my first iPod and realizing that there was just this fantastic high-quality programming available. And mostly I began as a listener during my walks and exercise, listening predominantly to food programming. And then after learning to crochet and learning to knit, one day I was on a walk and I just thought to myself, I wonder if there are any knitting podcasts. It had never occurred to me that that might be a thing. So that's when I discovered the wonderful world of knitting podcasts, in particular Paula Emmons Feasley's Knitting Pipeline, which was the first one I listened to and continues to be the enduring favorite. I owe podcasts the gratitude of learning additional skills like spinning and weaving and knitting with hand spun, learning about sheep breeds, and also for the amazing women and men that I've met in person and also online who share the same creative spirit, an inquisitive personality, and have just been really fun to get to know and to learn from. Long before I thought about having a knitting podcast or a fiber arts podcast, I had been podcasting with students in the classroom. In the language arts curriculum, there's about 25% information that students need to know, and about 75% is skills that students need to do. So performance assessments, rather than tests or quizzes, are more effective in measuring what students know how to do. In particular, in the language arts classroom, they need to demonstrate and use and practice 5 skills: reading, writing, listening, speaking, and viewing. Working together with their classmates and drafting, revising, and recording an audio podcast about a work of literature or an author proved to be a very successful learning assessment tool. So I purchased podcasting equipment, like this Rode podcaster microphone, and used my laptop so that students could record podcasts, and they would also be writing the script for their show. And in their script would be all of the directions for how they wanted it mixed down. If they wanted sound effects added, if they wanted bits of vocal overlapping each other. We used M4A files so that they also had images in there. And so I would take care of all of the mixing down because we didn't have computers for everyone in the classroom, but they would do the recording. And all this time, over many years that I did podcasting with my students, I kept thinking about a podcast of my own. Of course, at that time, I thought it would be something with a more literary implication, but it never came to be. I helped them record their podcasts. I made some sample podcast episodes about expectations, like, you know, welcome to your year in AP literature, and these are some of the expectations. And I just never really got around to developing something of my own. But after listening to Knitting Pipeline and becoming fascinated with the way Paula took several disparate ideas, like the knitting and then being in a pipe band and her love of nature, and they weren't necessarily things that went together, but the way she put them together because she cared about them all made it work. And people who may have not really have had an interest in one of those things became interested based on her enthusiasm. And I just thought that was a great model for a podcast. I knew I wanted it to be an audio podcast because I had audio equipment. And I thought that there would be fewer roadblocks, I guess, to recording an audio podcast. Less setup, less to worry about, and a little bit easier to edit and upload. So after a great deal of thinking, Yarns at Yinhu came into being. And it's my objective to share with you my life in the fiber arts as a crafter, but also other things that I explore and things that I enjoy, like poetry and working on a historic home, enjoying nature, a mindful life, especially mindful eating, and then, of course, my love of cooking and baking. I have grown to appreciate and to learn from so many of the things that listeners have posted and suggested over the years that I've been doing the podcast. And it's become a very important part of my week and even my day, because I find myself thinking about the podcast all of the time. In my show notes this week, I will post links to some of my favorite podcasts. I'm predominantly an audio podcast listener because I like to listen while I exercise. And I also have a long commute. So audio podcasts really do help keep me company. I would love suggestions of some of your favorites, and maybe I will gather ideas for some future listening. The back porch. The big completed project this week is Miranda, a pullover style sweater designed by Jose Paquin. This is a gift that I knit for my youngest sister, Jessica, upon her request for a sweater, a farm work sweater that was styled like a hoodie. I began this project on October 1st, and I am very pleased to have completed it and to have given it to her. And perhaps, listeners, you are even more pleased that this will be the last time I talk about working on this sweater, because I feel like it was a drag, not because of the sweater pattern or the choice of yarn, but just I think my discomfort in knitting for someone else and not feeling certain that it was going well because I didn't have her available to try the sweater on. It really fit so beautifully. I have included a photograph of the two of us in the show notes. It's a little bit oversized, which she liked very much and said that that will be perfect for layering. The only regret I have is that I wasn't able to block it before giving it to her. I finished the knitting on Christmas Day, and we were having our family Christmas on Sunday. We've had this terrible damp and rainy weather, and I just thought that if I soaked that sweater, it would never dry in time, and I thought it would be really awful to give someone a soggy, wet mass of wool as their gift. So she will be able to soak that sweater and see how lovely the fabric turns. I just turned the sweater inside out and used my steam iron to give it a good steam. It did help relax all of the stitches, and it looks nice, but I think it will look infinitely better once she is able to soak it. She said she would probably wear it to death and need to wash it right away anyway, so I think that will work out fine. I made the sleeves on this sweater extra long, and the last 3.5-4 inches is a ribbed cuff so that she can pull that sleeve down over her hand, or she can turn that cuff up, and that will give her some extra stretch. One thing you do a lot when you're working on a farm is you're pushing your sleeves up. So I wanted her to have a really stretchy sleeve there that would stay up. And the original pattern only calls for just a little bit of ribbing at the bottom of the sleeve. So I adjusted that a little bit. I knit the hood. I was worried about how the hood was attached, how it would look, how it would fall down the back, and it's actually very attractive. If I were to knit this hood for myself, I would give it an additional inch of length before starting the decreases and starting to pull it together. On my sister, it worked fine. She's very petite, so maybe her neck to crown of head measurement is a little bit less than mine. The sweater is nice and long. It hits her at low hip, so it would be great to wear with leggings, with skirts, with work jeans. It's pretty versatile, and I just love the way that beautiful cable on the front is shaped. It just gives a really nice feminine touch to the sweater. The pouch pocket is awesome. We talked about how she would be able to go out to the hen house and fill that pocket with eggs and bring them back in. So I think it's really an excellent achievement. I am so pleased that this sweater is in her hands. And this pattern by Jose Paquin is something I would certainly consider knitting for myself, or even knitting for someone else in the future. Now that I understand the pattern, I might even try to do a little bit of shaping in the waist and the bust. And I think that when I visit Battenkill Fiber Mill again this spring, I will certainly be purchasing enough yarn to make another one and for myself this time. I used 4 skeins of a Romney Merino blend from Battenkill Fiber Mill. It's undyed in a beautiful silvery gray color. It's just absolutely wonderful yarn to work with. It had some tooth to it. It felt a little bit rustic, but not at all scratchy. My washed and blocked swatch has almost a silky texture to it. So I think that the density and the drape of this fabric is really going to improve with washing. And it's, I would say it's between a DK and a worsted weight yarn. It's a little bit lofty. So even though the yarn seems plump, it actually has a lot of air in it so that it knits up, I think, more of a DK weight. The pattern called, I believe, for US size 8 needles, but I used US size 7, and I used just under 4 skeins of this yarn, which were marked as 300 yards each. Because they were a mill purchase and they were seconds of a yarn, I'm not sure where that yarn was originally intended to go, like for what brand she was spinning it. But she did say that, you know, there are a number of reasons why she retains the yarn and it doesn't go to its intended destination. One is there are a lot of breaks and knots. I did have one skein with quite a few breaks in it. One is that it's overplied or underplied. And I did have a skein with almost unplied section of yarn. And another reason she stated is that the skeins could be actually overweight or underweight. So in that case, I didn't weigh the skeins before I started knitting. I really don't know if they were overweight or underweight, but I'm assuming that altogether, this sweater with the long sleeves, the hood, and the pouch pocket in a size small took about 1,100 yards. That's my guess. So I would knit this size small for myself as well. And so I think 4 skeins of this yarn as a purchase in the future would be absolutely perfect. Once again, and for the last time, that is the Miranda, a sweater design by Jose Paquin and available on Ravelry. The front porch. With the completion of the Miranda sweater, I was able to return to what I like to be my December tradition of gift knitting, and that is knitting with gifts that I have received over the course of the year, either patterns or yarn, or maybe with tools or something that's inspired by someone else. And that to me really helps me get into the holiday spirit. And so the first thing I did was to resuscitate a project that I began in May 2014. And that is a bit of cording. In a recent episode of Fiber Trek, Sarah talked about working on some cording, I think with some Herdwick yarn that she has been spinning. And it reminded me that I had this UFO languishing project of making cording with a beautiful Lucette from Stephen Willette that I purchased at Maryland Sheep and Wool in May. And then I had some incredibly rustic, very thick singles that my sister had given me. I think she gave this yarn to me on 2 separate occasions. There's some handspun with a pinkish tint and 2 additional skeins with a greenish tint. And so my idea was to take that incredibly rustic, thick and thin yarn and make it into cording using the Lucette, and then take a very, very large size crochet hook and crochet a rug or a mat. There's a landing at the bottom of our stairs inside. And for, I don't know, since I moved in, we've had a cotton rug there that's too large and folded in half. We've never bought the appropriate size rug for that space. And I feel like it is nice to have some sort of a rug before you start up the stairs there. So I thought that this would probably be enough cording if I made all of that yarn into cordage to crochet a nice, thick, squishy mat. And it, you know, it wouldn't be anything fine or delicate, but it would really be this workhorse mat for our home. And after working on it a little bit, I had sort of set that aside. And so I took that out and I have begun working on cording again with my Lucette. In the meantime, my Facebook friend, Lara Moody, sent me a US size U, I think, crochet hook. It's a 25 millimeter crochet hook. And I took it out and tried it on some of the cording I had already made. And I think that will be the perfect size to crochet this mat. So that's an ongoing project and something I can work on evenings until I have enough cordage to complete it. The other project I began working on was a pair of new socks. And that is because Santa gave me some signature DPNs in size US 1 for Christmas. This is something I had requested because I have knit a few pairs of socks, but I haven't really hit upon the type of sock knitting that other people talk about. Like, they're always knitting a pair of socks. I have a languishing pair of socks that is two at a time on a very large circular needle. And that project sort of stalled out. So I thought, well, you know, maybe knitting on DPNs would be a little more pleasurable and I would feel like I had better control and interest in the project. So on Christmas Day, I cast on a pair of socks using a variation, I suppose, of Susan B. Anderson's How I Knit My Socks. I cast on 56 stitches using, in my stash I had some, I don't have a lot of sock yarn because I'm not a sock knitter, but I had some Indulgence 6-ply in, I don't think the colorway has a name, but it's kind of Christmassy because it has reds and greens and a little bit of gray and blue. I don't know. It just looked Christmassy to me. It's not exactly an evenly striped yarn, but it's dyed in a way that there are stripes of various width. And it makes it fun to knit with, and you can see the progression of the striping happening as you knit. So I thought that would be a good choice. I cast on 56 stitches using a tubular cast on, and I knit about 3 fingers or maybe 1.5 inches of 1x1 rib. And then I switched to a knit 3 purl 1 rib because one of the things that I noticed about the very few pairs of socks that I knit is they don't seem to fit very well. They seem to sag. Stockinette stitch just doesn't maintain its shape even for an hour or two. I don't know. The socks just don't seem like they fit very well to me. So I thought, well, maybe the way to overcome that is to have some ribbing really throughout the sock. So I knit the entire leg in a 3x1 rib. And then I used Susan B. Anderson's pattern recipe. I had to adjust it slightly because I think she is casting on 64 stitches in that pattern. And I cast on the 56. So then I used her heel flap and gusset directions. They worked beautifully. There were no holes. I took a tip I have heard on podcasts many times, and I picked up one extra stitch along the heel flap on each side. And then as I was knitting, I sort of combined that stitch with another stitch so that I closed that up and got back on track with my stitch count. And I knit the entire gusset, and then I moved on to the foot, and I kept going with the 3x1 ribbing on the top of the foot, and then just plain stockinette on the bottom. And now I am about an inch away from starting to do the toe decreases. And I really feel like I haven't knit on the project that much at all. It's going very quickly. So that is good. I felt that even with the DPN stuck in it this morning, it was far enough along that I could put the sock on my foot and see how it felt. And I still think it's too loose. Not terribly so. I mean, these socks will fit. I will knit another one the exact same way. But I don't know if it's the yarn. This Indulgence yarn is pretty substantial sock yarn. Maybe I should cast on 52 stitches. I don't know. But that was a thought that I had. So I'm on a quest of continuing to think about socks and sock knitting, and maybe setting a goal for myself having to do with sock knitting. My reason, one of the reasons behind this endeavor, is that I have this beautiful Agatha sock pattern by Claire of New Hampshire Knits, and I desperately want to knit it, but I just feel like my sock knitting skills might not be up to speed. So I wanted to try something a little more simple before starting a sock design. And also I will need to acquire some sock yarn in a nice plain color or just a slightly tonal color to really do that pattern justice. Agatha, as many listeners know, is one of Claire's chickens. And I thought that these socks, if I could knit them very nicely, would be a beautiful Christmas gift for my mother, who is also a chicken lover. And I think that they could be really pretty in a festive red or maybe an evergreen sort of color. So that's one of my goals with the sock knitting. Once again, that is the How I Knit My Socks pattern by Susan B. Anderson, with some slight adjustments. And I am knitting that on US size 1 double pointed needles with Indulgence 6-ply yarn. Gratitude Journal. In the last episode, I asked listeners for some advice and suggestions for a very plain mitten pattern in fingering weight yarn so that I could continue this goal I have of knitting a set of a hat and cowl and mitts using the same pattern motif. And the motif I love so much is from Amy Vandelaar's pattern for the Bushwalk Beanie. And it is a fern frond pattern. I've knit the hat to her pattern specifications, and I'm currently working on a cowl in a DK weight yarn using the same patterning. So that project is in progress. And then the third element of this set is the one where I think I will need to do the most figuring and adjusting. That's my anticipation anyway. And that is a pattern for the mitts. So I plan to knit the mitts in the same yarn that I did the hat. And then the cowl is in a different yarn in a heavier weight. So I want to say thank you so much for some suggestions I received. One is that Anne Budd's book of basic patterns could be an excellent resource for a mitten pattern. Another suggestion is The Waiting for Winter Mitts. I think that's a pattern by Susan B. Anderson. And then there was also the suggestion of a pattern by Nancy Lindberg called Fittin' Mittens. And I like this suggestion a lot because the pattern is really more of a recipe where you could use any weight yarn, any size needles, get the fabric you like, and then do the math to make the adjustments for your mittens. This is the kind of learning that I want to do to get my design mind active as I think about these mittens. So that is a suggestion that I may end up using for these mitts. I will continue investigating and exploring suggestions until it's time for me to actually cast on the mittens. But in the meantime, I would like to say thank you so much to those folks who provided some links, suggestions, and resources. Hockey Rachel, Turbo Girl, and Lou in San Fran, I think. Lou in SF. Thank you so much for your input. I really appreciate that. One of the gifts I've received this holiday season is the gift of a subscription to Taproot magazine. It's been about 8 months since I've received a subscription of any kind. I felt overwhelmed with my subscriptions and really upset and angry with myself that I was receiving magazines and I didn't have time or didn't make time in my life to look carefully at each one. It just felt wasteful and I felt overwhelmed and they really started to fill me with anxiety rather than bring me joy. So I took a break from all subscriptions. I just let them run out and did not renew. And I used the time to think very carefully about what I would like to receive into my life that would really make it richer and that I would vow to make time for when each issue arrived. And I had heard a lot about Taproot magazine, and I thought that might be a good fit. So Samuel has ordered me a subscription, and he also gave me a back issue. I think it's the issue 15, the Folk issue. And I have been enjoying that. I am really impressed at how many articles are included, the variety, the depth, and then also just sort of the extra attention to detail. I really enjoy that it's advertising free. And then, you know, we started exploring some of the extras. So I think as an accompaniment to the most recent issue, there are some PDF little cutout paper houses that you can color in and cut out and tape together and create a small ornament for your tree or for a window display. So we printed those PDFs and we made some of those houses. And I think it's something initially that I thought I would enjoy, but Samuel's been looking at the back issue and he thinks that he will really enjoy this subscription too. So I feel that I made a very smart choice and I'm looking forward to receiving this publication this year. And I think that it may even be a means of giving me direction and guidance for the coming year. It ties into something that I have talked about in previous episodes, which this idea of the head, the heart, and the hands. And I had talked about, you know, objectives in education being, you know, give the students something to do, something to think about, and something to love. And this also intersects with Rudolf Steiner and some of the teachings and the principles of Waldorf education. So I think this may give some shape to my days and maybe even to podcast episodes in the coming year. It's something I will be thinking about a little bit more as 2015 comes to a close and 2016 opens up before us with all of its possibilities. And I look forward to sharing some of that with you. Thank you so much for joining me on the Yarns at Yinhu podcast, whether you're a new listener or you've been listening to the show from the early days. I really appreciate that, and it is very gratifying to form this community together with you. So I wish you all of the blessings of the holiday season and the best and brightest wishes for the upcoming new year.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves are down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet. Music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider liking the show's Facebook page, joining the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry, or leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Nature's a bouquet you hide till your face is mine. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.